Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin. I'm your Seahawks super fan. You're not going to hear much from me other than the intro and the outro, and that's probably just fine by you. It is championship week. AFC and NFC championships were decided tonight. We know who's going to be in the Super Bowl. I won't spoil it, even though you already know if you're listening to this. But we've got a really, really good show. We go in deep on both these games. 1 hour to cover both of them. We've got our Eagles super fan, our Jaguars super fan. We've got our Lions super fan filling in with the hosting duties. Before we get to that, though, of course, I want to mention our sponsor, Harry's Razors. You've heard me mention it 1,000 times. I know Pod has done the same. There's a reason why millions and millions of men have switched. It is simply better razors for less money. I'm just going to summarize it that way. They own their own factory. There's no middleman. They engineered these awesome five-blade razors. We've got a deal where you can try them out for free. And trust me, as somebody who tried them for the first time a few months ago, I'm never going back. In your free sample kit, you get the five-bladed razor with a lubricating strip. You get the weighted ergonomic handle. You get the really, really good shave gel. All you do is pay for shipping. No risk, no obligation to continue. So take advantage of that deal, which is exactly what you want to do. Go to harrys.com/nextfanup. That's harrys.com/nextfanup. All right. Josh, throwing it your way.
All right. Welcome to the Championship Weekend Recap Show. It is I, Josh, your Detroit Lions super fan. And oh, do I wish I could be talking about my own team. Unfortunately, not, my friends. I am just here on hosting duty. And along with me, a very happy, happy Philadelphia Eagles super fan. It's James. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I was expecting the win. I just never saw this outcome playing out the way it did. Blowout fashion, 38-7 game, total domination on both sides of the ball. The Eagles never really put this game in any type of doubt whatsoever and dominated in every phase from basically beginning to end, save the opening drive by the Minnesota Vikings. Who got out to an early 7-0 start, in which I believe was like a non-play 75-yard drive. They threw the ball twice, which ended up being a 25-yard touchdown pass on the second pass play of the drive. And defense was caught off guard in the shift by the Vikings offense. Kyle Rudolph got free on Najee Good, who was in for Danelle Ellaby, who was out injured, and just total miscommunication that entire drive. They ran the ball like crazy on that first drive, probably got about 40 yards. And on the sidelines, I'm pretty sure Schwartz got into the defense and lit them up, and boy, did it show, because the next time Minnesota got the ball, pick six, 50-yard return by Patrick Robinson, and we never looked back from that point forward. LeGarrette Blount got in on the action with an 11-yard touchdown run. Nick Foles played quite possibly up to this point the best playoff game I have seen in a long time. I'm not going to call this the game of his life, because some years ago when we had a previous head coach who I refuse to name, he went up to Oakland and threw 7 touchdown passes. So this wasn't necessarily the game of his life, but definitely up there is one of his best games ever. He threw 3 touchdown passes, no interceptions, 26 of 33 passing. So he took very good control of the ball. It was just all-around dominance. I do like the balance that was exuded by the Philadelphia offense. Coaches kept mixing in the run, 33 pass plays, 30 rushing attempts for 110 yards, time of possession, 34-26, and, you know, third down conversion where we excelled all year. We ended up being 10-14. Minnesota ended up finishing 6-13. So, they couldn't convert third down. We sustained drives by converting third down, kept things going, kept grinding it out with Blount and Ajayi, and timely opportunities when players are running free across the middle of downfield, Nick Foles was able to get them the ball. So to say that I am elated is an understatement. I am happy to see my team going back to another Super Bowl. First time since Super Bowl 39, in which we lost to the Patriots. Something I'll talk about later, but this was legitimately an all-around beating in every sense of the word. For as great as the Vikings looked last week, playing a solid back-and-forth game against the New Orleans Saints, they looked completely out of it. Like I said, aside from that first drive, they hit on all cylinders. They pretty much ran the ball down our throats. There were a lot of outside counter plays in which they plugged the middle to stop Fletcher Cox and Tim Jernigan from getting pushed up the middle and bounce it outside. They outflanked our defensive ends who couldn't set the edge fast enough, who, you know, were caught slanting inside and getting pinned in by crackback blocks. And running backs were getting 7 to 8 yards of burst downfield between Murray and McKinnon. And that pretty much it put our defense on its heel. And that was about as out of sorts that I've seen our defense in some time this season, in a while. They look confused, lost, perplexed, like whatever you want to call it. They were just severely out of whack and nothing looked right. So I give credit to Minnesota. That first drive, they hit us where it hurt, and they kept doing it over and over and over again until they got that touchdown. On the Eagles' first possession, they forced us to punt. They got the ball back, and like I said, 50-yard interception return by Patrick Robinson. Case Keenum was hit by Chris Long on the pass attempt. The ball sailed on him right in Patrick Robinson's hands, who runs up the sideline and cuts back across field and gets a nice solid block, not a great block, but it was a solid block by Darby on McKinnon to pretty much hold him up so he couldn't get an angle on Robinson as he scooted into the end zone. From that point forward, the defense went forced 2 3-and-outs, in which the Eagles came back. They forced another turnover on Case Keenum. The rookie, Barnett, stripped Keenum. Chris Long recovers that fumble. We go downfield, score another touchdown, force another 3-and-out, force them to punt, get the ball back with about 30 seconds left and kick a field goal before the end of the half. Second half, long methodical drives, take 6 and 7 minutes off the clock, just moving the ball downfield. I can't even call what this play was to Torrey Smith on the touchdown pass in the beginning of the third quarter. Pseudo flea flicker type situation, hands off to the running back who turns around, pitches it back, and a nice drop in the basket for Torrey Smith over the shoulders. He drags his knees across the goal line for the score. The next one, the deep bomb, the next drive, sorry, beginning of the fourth quarter was methodical. Just constantly grinding 5, 6, 7 yards of play, even on pass plays, hitting guys in stride, getting first downs after first down, after first down, not even waiting to third down most of the time. Still battering ramming the running play right up the middle of that Vikings defense and a nice route by Alshon Jeffrey to get behind the defense in the red zone for a 5-yard touchdown catch. And, you know, the next two drives by Minnesota, one ends on downs, the other pretty much ends in the third turnover by Case Keenum, a second interception. Darby bats the ball up. It's intercepted. I can't remember the defensive player who gets the interception, but they take the knee. They go from that point, there's 4 minutes left on the clock, and they just grind it out with the running game to get it to the 2-minute warning, and it's a victory formation from that point on.
Yeah, anytime Zach Sudfeld's in there, you know, kneeling the ball at the end of the game for you guys, that's usually bad news or extremely good news. And of course, you know, today it was extremely good news. We really didn't get a chance to set this game up, but dude, I can't blame you. I'd be over the moon. It's so excited if my team was in the, you know, NFC Championship and they won. But yeah, absolutely, coming into this game, Philadelphia was the quote unquote underdog. Just a slight underdog, if you want to be, you know, technical about it. I know the dog masks were out in full force in the stands, as you mentioned before we before we recorded here. But yeah, absolutely a one-sided game. Philly, of course, the you mentioned that the Vikings scored on their opening drive. And that was the story of the game. Was after that, that was it. They did come out. They ran the ball well on the first drive. 38 unanswered points, though, by the Eagles. And you mentioned Foles going nearly 80% here. 352 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Once Rhodes went out of the game, it was pretty much over at that point. They seemed like they were able to move the ball and pretty much do whatever they wanted to do. Ajayi and Blount combined for almost 100 yards there. Zach Ertz, who you didn't really see Foles utilize, I thought once he took over for Wentz, he utilized him, but I should say not as much as when Wentz was in there. And I thought that he was just huge all game. He was always there converting on third downs when they needed it. The Eagles just, they couldn't be stopped. And one question
he
that
was
I
actually
had,
perfect throwing to Zach Ertz today. Perfect 8 for 8 when targeting.
Yeah, you gotta love that. You gotta love that. You know, the safety blanket, quote unquote. But one thing I wanted to ask you, what is the main difference that you see from Nick Foles from now compared to that 2013 season when he had the 27 touchdowns to 2 picks with Shurmur, Pat Shurmur, who's on the other sideline, who's also reportedly to be the New York Giants next head coach. We'll find out here this week now that the Vikings are going home. But what's the main I know we don't want to mention the head coach's name. I would not dare to ask you to do that, sir. but what do you see from the Pat Shurmur offense to this year with Doug Peterson's second year as the head coach in this offensive scheme that Foles is having success with most recently, you know, noticeably today?
Well, I think in that era with the coach who I shall never name ever again, when Pat Shurmur was the OC, there was a lot of RPO, run play option plays in that offense, in which you put you're checking for one particular defender on one side of the field, and you're trying to see where he moves. If he stands still, you're sticking it in the belly of the running back and letting the running back do whatever the run play is. If that guy moves in any way, shape, or form that vacates the area of the field where that route is going, you're firing it in there as fast as possible. So there wasn't a lot of reading of the defense in that offense, you know, in those years before Doug Peterson and Frank Reich showed up, current OC. And he had a lot of success there because there was a lot of quick hitters. The defense never really had time to react to what was going on in the field. By the time they read run, the ball was already gone. And if he hit the receiver in stride, he's probably 50 yards downfield before they can even turn their heads around. This time around, the offense obviously was geared more towards Carson Wentz's skill sets. And you saw regression in the last 3 weeks of the season in Nick Foles from the Giants game to the Raiders game and then the Cowboys game at the end of the season. Things progressively got worse. And we never really knew exactly what it was because there were still some of those run-pass options in the Giants game, and they were few and far in between in the Raiders game, almost non-existent. And it got to the point where it was like, we've got to figure out what works for Nick Foles. You can't run the offense the same way because obviously Foles and Wentz aren't the same quarterback. Wentz is definitely more mobile. Wentz is pretty much given more free rein of the offense. And Foles has, up until Wentz got hurt, had no time, you know, to pretty much get in sync with these wide receivers. So once the bye week came for the playoffs and he was actually able to get more time, you saw last week, more connections, they cater to his skill set, more RPO plays, more quick hitters where you're pretty much given 1-2 options, get the ball out real quick. Hey, these are the plays that we're going where we're outflanking the defense to one side so you can hit the receivers in stride, get them to turn up field. Not a lot of deep shots. This week, however, this game, they pretty much let it all hang out. He had the RPOs early. And towards the end of the second quarter and into the second half, they were giving him looks to pretty much scan the defense and make reads to the third, fourth, fifth option. He took two shots downfield that were phenomenal, hitting a blown coverage to Alshon Jeffrey. That was a 50-yard score. Then, like I said, the other deep score, 40-some yards to Torrey Smith, who he had a deep shot to earlier. Smith just dropped the ball. It was right on the shoulder pad. But I think they found what works for him, which is mixing in more of the run-pass option, which was successful for him during that 27-2 season touchdown to interception.
Yeah, I completely agree. I definitely think something clicked during the bye week. I mean, his efficiency, James, is just, it's been off the charts. I mean, the dude was 76% last week with his passes. And yeah, you know, they didn't blow the doors off Atlanta like they did this week. But I mean, 76%. And then he was even higher than that this week. He almost hit 80% on his completion percentage. Absolutely phenomenal game for Nick Foles. I thought that you made me get a little nostalgic. You mentioned Frank Reich. You know, I'm dating myself a little bit here, but one of the first playoff games I ever remember watching as a young kid was when Frank Reich led the Bills back from 35-3 against the Oilers. I'll pretty much never forget that, you know, as long as I live.
None of us ever will. I remember that game as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, I was super excited to have him as a Detroit Lion. I think he was only like a backup, you know, slash clipboard holder at that point. But hey, you know, we reminisce about all things. I'm sure you'll look back and you know, reminisce on the drubbing that the Vikings took from your Eagles today as well. A matchup that featured two of the top run defenses here. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the two top run defenses in the NFL. So it's not a surprise. You know, with Philly, you guys were giving up less than 80 yards a game on the ground during the regular season. So it was just shocking to see Minnesota have success during those first, you know, that first drive
that
where
first
they had
drive,
those.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had, I want to say like 40 yards on the ground. I think they finished with 62 on the day. So that give you any 70. Idea. Yeah, so they basically clamped down mm-hmm. after that. So
and the key about those 40 yards in the first drive, halftime stats show that they only had 44 for the half. So 40 rushing yards on the first drive. Four rushing yards since then, because their halftime total was 44 total yards rushing. And then obviously just 26 the rest of the way for the total of 70 yards. Like I said, that first drive woke up our defense to let them know, like, you're going to have to play better than this to beat this team. And it was never has a smack in the mouth been more appreciated to wake up a defense to say, you're not playing the way you should be playing. And yeah, they held up the end of the bargain. They played like the number one overall run defense from that point forward. And it was, you know, before you could turn your head, you look up, you're down 21-7 and halftime 24-7. And the run is pretty much no longer an option from that point going forward. Once it hits 31-7, you're pretty much chucking every single run play in the playbook. And it plays right into our hands because it allows our pass rush to get to the quarterback. It allows our secondary to be a little bit more aggressive on plays, especially if the ball is coming out with errant throws. So,
absolutely.
It's something that front four prides itself on, and they showed out today.
Yeah, and I did want to touch a little bit on the front four, primarily – Jernigan and Chris Long. I know Chris Long is with you guys for the season. Hopefully he comes back. But I feel like every time I'm watching an Eagles game this year, I feel like he's just making huge plays at clutch moments. He's just showing up. I thought Jernigan and Cox, that combination, all year has been phenomenal. You know, when teams are double teaming Cox, it just seems to be to where they can't focus all their attention on one guy because Jernigan seems to kind of step up in those points. And that line really plays fantastic. And of course, Brandon Graham is very underrated in my opinion for a number of years. Just a very consistent, you know, force off the edge that really, in my opinion, hasn't got a lot of recognition until recently. just wanted to talk about, you know, the front four real quick. How big was the move to get Jernigan and also bringing over Chris Long, who, from what I understand, sounds like he kind of took a pay cut to come to the Eagles because he saw a big opportunity. And when you're taking somebody like that who just came off of the Super Bowl champion Patriots and putting them on this team, that's also got to kind of make you feel a little good about the next game coming up as well, a.k.a. the biggest game of the year.
Indeed. You know, Chris Long, the reason he wasn't going to re-sign with New England was the way he was used. And, you know, the scheme didn't fit him. He wasn't given a lot of opportunity to rush the passer. They, you know, kind of had some things where, you know, his position had to drop off in the coverage. Not really his game plan. He wanted to find a defense that played a solid 4-3, put him, you know, as a down, you know, three technique to rush upfield, set the edge, stop the run, or just straight disrupt the quarterback. The way the Eagles run those front four is with an 8-man rotation. So he doesn't necessarily start, but when it's crunch time, when we're in the 2-minute, you know, the offense is in 2-minute mode and the defense is on the field, he's one of those guys that's always out there. You know, the trade to get Timmy Jernigan over from Baltimore in the offseason before training camp, before preseason got started, was huge considering I'm drawing a blank on his name. We lost our other defensive tackle to Kansas City in the offseason.
Was it Logan? Benny Logan?
Benny Logan, thank you, who we lost in the offseason. So that trade for Jernigan was huge. Otherwise, I don't say like Bo Allen or Vallejo wouldn't have been able to step up as a starter in that place. But you need another big body there alongside Fletcher Cox, because in tonight's game, Fletcher was only left one-on-one blocking situations probably about 3 or 4 times, and, you know, not really on purpose, kind of by design with the center helping out. But there were a ton of times during this game where Fletcher Cox drew 3 linemen, if not the tight end, to crack inside to help with the blocking scheme, you know, whether they were doing stunts or he was just straight rushing up the middle. They kept blockers in. The center helped. They pulled the tight end, you know, second tight end in, or the backer in the backfield came in to help chip. And you don't see the backer chipping the tackle on the way out. He's supposed to chip the end. But when you got a guy like Cox who can draw double and triple teams on the interior, it allows your outside rushers one-on-one and whoever that second tackle is to get that push up the middle, which is so desperately needed to get quarterbacks off their spots. So you can disrupt that passing game. You throw in a rookie like Derek Barnett, Vinny Curry, Brandon Graham, like you mentioned, who are, you know, pretty much default starters. Those guys are huge. And when you rotate those guys in the way we've been doing all season, you know, like I mentioned, coming into this game with our Vikings fan when we did the pregame battle, no one on our defensive line played more than about 46% of the defensive snaps in any game this season. Fast forward to last week, we had 3 defensive linemen play about 80 to 85% of the snaps at minimum. I'm pretty sure today that number was right about the same. Maybe 3 or 4 guys playing at least 80 to 85% of the snaps. Again, it keeps them fresh. So guys like Cox and Long and Barnett, Graham and Curry, they can rush the passer, because in our pass rushing scheme, we pull a defensive tackle and throw in another pass rusher. Vinny Curry pretty much goes to the interior. Barnett and Long are our outside rushers. So you've got Vinny Curry rushing up the middle, or even Brandon Graham rushing up the middle with Fletcher Cox. If we can just get pressure with those 4 without having to bring additional rushers, and we did bring additional people tonight, situational type things, just to get Keenum to get the ball out of his hands early. But for the most part, 4-man rush had Keenum in the second half completely out of sorts. They moved him off the spot. They rattled him. They got hits on him when necessary. One of the drives that ended up, you know, when they the drive ended on downs, Keenum got sacked because Long came in one way, Graham came in another way, and even though he stepped up, Graham was able to shed the tackle and get back upfield to, you know, to get pressure on him right before he throws the ball away towards the pylon. So that's been one of the key things that's been keeping us, one, it keeps the defensive line fresh, like I said, and it's played a factor in, you know, our number one rush defense. So in the fourth quarter, when, you know, we're up like we were today, pretty much 38-7 for the entire fourth quarter, and they're in passing mode, you can have that constant pass rush, and you can drop seven in coverage and disguise some things.
And, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, that's just huge, huge going forward. It's shown dividends last week when we won, you know, 15-10. It proved huge this week as well in the second half, because you as an offensive line, if you're seeing the same guys out there play after play after play, and they're only getting a blow every now and then, you know, if you get the lead, you're kind of, you know, in this mode where, okay, we're dominating them. We can do what we want. You flip the score and the other team is up, say, 7 to 10 points at minimum, and you're in pass only mode. Here you have these fresh bodies coming at you, and you've been on the field all day, you know, as an offensive lineman, and you've got these guys who pretty much look like they've got energy for days, just screaming past you, you know, pushing you back into the quarterback, getting you off your spots as far as blocking. It's a very disruptive tool. It's a great scheme. Kudos to Schwartz and the defensive staff for setting that up this year.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that Jim Schwartz is again being mentioned for head coaching vacancies. And as a former Lion, you know, as a current Lions fan, and have him being our former coach, you know, good for him. You know, there's no hard feelings here with us Lions fans. We hope he does get a second shot. I fully expect him to be successful. That whole front seven, Malcolm Jenkins, just McLeod, all those guys are phenomenal to watch. Patrick Robinson, I thought, was just an amazing surprise, being, I think, one of the top-ranked slot corners this year. Those guys able to get pressure on Keenum all day long. And we can't make it too one-sided, James. I do want to talk just a sliver here about the Vikings, and mention Keenum, of course. With Shurmur being the OC there in Minnesota and likely on his way to the Giants, again, he was Foles' OC back in the 2013 season when he, you know, just lit the league on fire. Just real quick, how much do you think the success that Keenum and also Sam Bradford, when he was under center for the Vikings this year and last, after they taking over for Norv Turner, how much do you think that the defense of the Eagles, I should say, being able to kind of, you mentioned the rotation. I guess I'm not asking a question. I'll just say personally, I'll make a comment. I think that the Eagles are able to just crush every week from a defensive standpoint, because they're not on the field all the time like they were back when the coach, who will be remain nameless, was running things.
Indeed.
They were
Indeed.
On the field a lot. So you have to kind of get, you know, rotating bodies in there. So it's nice to see what that defense can do when they're actually on the field for a majority of the snaps. And then the other thing that I did want to ask you about was them being so successful and getting pressure today on Keenum. But stemming off of that, how much of Keenum's success and Bradford this year do you think has been attributed to having Pat Shurmur there calling the plays?
I think that's huge. You know, Shurmur's a very good OC. He's been in the league quite a long time. To have Bradford play well week one and then Keenum take over from week two on and basically have a phenomenal season. I believe he is going to the Pro Bowl. At one point, he was being mentioned as far as MVP candidate when, you know, the team was pretty much blowing out people. And let's not take anything away from Minnesota. You can call this a blip on the radar as far as their defense, but they've had a phenomenal season the way they, you know, crushed opponents both at home and a handful on the road.
And oh, yeah.
Case Keenum, you know, was a big part of that. He wasn't just a game manager, which people expected him to be, because essentially he came into the season as a third string quarterback because they expected Bridgewater to be ready, you know, probably by week five or so.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the plan was to have Sam Bradford just quarterback Keenan was the emergency in case we need him. We expect Bridgewater to be healthy enough to suit up. And when those things didn't happen the way they wanted to, you throw Case Keenum in there. And I'll be honest, me probably along with everyone else outside of Minnesota thought, well, there goes the Vikings season again.
I was totally in this guy's corner. I remember previewing this game in week 4, Lions Vikings, and although the Lions did win, I told Joe on our Superfan, man, I said, hey man, Case Keenum's no slouch. This dude came into Ford Field last year when he played for a Jeff Fisher-led Rams team and threw for like 380 and 3. So this dude, yes, absolutely no slouch. But yeah, it's nice to see him have success, man. It's and you hit it on the head, man. A blip on the radar, absolutely. That's all this is for the Vikings. Hell of a season for the Vikings, man. Their future is bright. A lot of people don't realize that in that game that I was referencing, our super fan battle, that was a game Dalvin Cook went out for the season. So many people don't even realize, like, dude, that was their number one pick, and he's going to be a hoss going forward. He's going to be the guy that's toting the rock, getting that Latavius Murray workload where you saw him getting a lot of volume this year. That's going to be Dalvin Cook. That team's going to be dangerous. I fully expect them to put the franchise tag on Keenum. I can't recall if they picked up Bridgewater's last year option in that rookie deal or not. I can't remember if they did or not, but
all three
this team is loaded.
Free agent.
They got to do something. They absolutely got to do something. I'm sure one of them's getting the franchise tag, but this defense remained very healthy all season, and you saw what they could do, man. This is a very good team. Not necessarily a good showing today, but yeah, unfortunately for us Lions fans, we have to look forward to having them and still that Aaron Rodgers guy in the division. So not looking forward to that, but we better wrap this one up, James, because it sounds like you and I are pulling double duty and also talking about the AFC championship as well. But indeed. Before we do, just wanted to again put a bow on this one. Your NFC champion Philadelphia Eagles, 38-7 victors over the Minnesota Vikings, and not what we expected in a game that was a lot more closer than you saw. This game opened up really strange. It opened up with the Patriots being a pretty heavy favorite early on in the week. I believe when the line first came out, the Patriots were getting as many as 9 points, and that quickly shrunk down into the 6 and 7 point range. When this game kicked off today, I believe, James, the line was at 2. So those who bet that game very heavily, when they got in, when the getting was good, they got in when they could have. So it was actually final score 24-20. The Patriots come back in just a phenomenal AFC championship game here. First off, James, I don't even know where to start. I was just for the sake of seeing something new, would have loved to see the Jags get into the Super Bowl. They definitely were out to a very solid start. One thing that Patrick had mentioned on the Superfan battle was he mentioned that he thought if the Patriots won the toss, and I'll be honest, I missed the toss. I don't know if they actually won or not, but he said that even if they did, instead of deferring like they always do about 99% of the time, they would actually elect to take the ball first to put the Jags in a disadvantage, put them in a position where they are already behind and they'd have to lean on Blake Bortles. Two things happened in this game. They did get the ball first. They did score first, but they only managed to scrape together a field goal. And Blake Bortles pretty much put together, you know, not a stellar or outstanding game by any stretch. But for those who kind of, you know, are naysayers, or Blake Bortles haters, I should say, pretty respectable game. He absolutely was on fire in the first half. For those who didn't get a chance to watch the game, the Jags actually leapt out to a 10-0 lead, scoring 10 points after the Gostkowski field goal, So it was, or I'm sorry, a 14-3 lead. Yeah, so there's a couple touchdowns there on the Jaguars end. But, you know, it didn't work out the way I wanted. I was really hoping the Patriots would lose so us Lions fans could just go ahead and get the confirmation that Matty P is coming to Motown to be our next head coach. But I digress, James. Why don't you take us through your news and notes here of the game? More specifically, what you saw after the Jags leapt out to that early lead.
So let me backtrack a little bit. The Jaguars actually won the coin toss, and they deferred to give the Patriots the ball first. That I thought was very interesting because I did catch this game from beginning to end. I thought it was very odd that they would give the Patriots the rock. Now, I do understand what our Patriots fan was thinking, that they would take the ball first and drive down to try to go up early, hopefully a touchdown. It didn't work out that way. They drove down, they got the 3 points, and you figured, okay, ho-hum, 3 points. This is probably just them warming up. Well, after that, Jacksonville comes back. They pound Leonard Fournette, and T.J. Yeldon, and good scheme and play calling by their offensive coordinator to have receivers completely wide open. I mean, the nearest Patriot defender on the two drives that resulted in touchdowns in the first half of Jacksonville was probably 5 yards away on almost every completion. They weren't even in the picture. Blake Bortles, I mean, say what you will, Blake Bortles looked like the second coming of Marino, Montana, Starbuck, Unitas, whatever Hall of Fame quarterback you want to dig into the annals and pull out, that's how good Blake Bortles looked in this first half, if not mostly the entire game. He didn't turn the ball over. Overall, he was 23 of 36. So pretty good, pretty solid completion percentage there. Like I said, Leonard Fournette was mixed in heavily and often along with T.J. Yeldon. And they did things as far as outflanking the Patriots with their play calling, especially a lot of the screens and the shots over the middle with the crossing routes, because these weren't your shallow crosses, you know, within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage to hit the receiver in stride so they can turn upfield and gallop another 10 to 15 yards. No, these were deep crossers. These crossing routes were 10 to 12 yards downfield. So they were going for first downs on first and second downs. They weren't waiting till third down to go get these first down plays. They were going after them early and often. And in the first quarter, and for the most part of the second quarter, they got what they wanted when they wanted. It was total ball control. They consumed the clock. The running game stayed as much of this game. Even if they were only getting 2 yards a carry, they stuck with it. If they wanted to go first down run, second down run, and make it third and six, they were living with that third and six. But they were completely outflanking the Patriots with some of their screen design setups where they were stacking three receivers in the back to one side, one receiver to the other side. And the flow of the defense just completely had them out of whack as far as where the play was actually going. Because whether it was zone or man, the way they lined up their defense, of course, they honored the strong side of the offense. But because it was so heavily honored, there was no one on the back side of the play to where the pass was actually going to even get to the wide receiver. So that's how they ended up with the 14-3 advantage. Unfortunately, things turned because you want to say the Patriots made adjustments or the Jaguars fell to the pressure of playoff experience, which I'm not going to use the lack of experience card because they've played two games before this point. Critical moment here is a drive in which they get delay of game on 3rd and 7. And it was kind of odd because the referees let the play go. They get the first down. They convert the third and three, if you will. They convert it, but you see the flag on the field, and the referees come back and say, well, it was delay of game. But typically in delay of game, you blow the whistle, you don't let the offense run the play, you march them back 5 yards, you start over.
Right.
It was very odd that this play was allowed to go on. I believe it was a corner route to Cole on the sideline who caught the ball, and they marched them back 5 yards. So 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, and Bortles is dancing around trying to avoid getting tackled and everything, and ends up getting sacked. He doesn't even get rid of the ball. That was the beginning of the end, unfortunately, for, you know, the Blake Bortles offense scoring touchdowns. They end up rushing to punt the ball back, which I don't understand why they completely ran up, because there seemed to be some issue with the clock. And if you were watching this game at home, you saw the clock fluctuate from 2:07 and jump up to 2:14 and 2:19 and then back down to 2:12. And it was very confusing because it didn't look like anybody knew exactly what the clock situation was, especially the Jaguars, who could have easily, because Bortles took the sack and there was a penalty on the play, which was holding, but declined, which means the clock was going to continue to run.
Yeah, that was weird, man. Right before, you're talking about right before the punt, right before the two-minute warning.
Exactly. And you normally you would let the clock run down to the two-minute warning, so you don't give that advantage to the opposition. Unfortunately, they get out there, they're lining up the punt. They actually punt the ball before the two-minute warning with the clock running, and it doesn't make any sense. So the Patriots field the ball with, what, 2:02 at the beginning of the possession. So they get to run one play and then get the two-minute warning, which is exactly what they did. They ran a dive up the middle, got about 5 yards, and two-minute warning. The next couple of plays were baffling, to say the least, because you get the deep pass to Rob Gronkowski and the 15-yard personal foul on Barry Church because of the helmet-to-helmet hit, which was the right call. Initially, in real time, it didn't look like anything that bad until you see the helmets actually collide. That play actually knocks Gronkowski out of the game. So they get 15 yards on that play. The very next play, and this is where the Patriots pretty much start finding things in-game and at halftime as far as adjustments. Cooks on A.J. Bouye, and Bouye runs him completely out of bounds, and this is probably a questionable call to some. I can understand why the call was made. Even though the ball was uncatchable, Bouye runs Brandon Cooks out of bounds and never looks back for the ball. And the one thing I'm always yelling at my TV when I'm watching defensive players downfield trying to cover wideouts, especially when they have zero awareness of where the ball is to turn, get your head around. At least get your head around. If you're going to do something shady with your arms and body the receiver to the sideline or the boundary, or do something somewhat questionable with your hands inside so the referees can't see it, at least get your head around so that you're actually playing the ball. When your back is to the ball and you're hand fighting the wide receiver, that's pass interference almost every single time. That call is always going to go against you, and that's the matchup that the Patriots then found that they could exploit for the rest of the game with Bouye on Cooks. Got the spot foul on that one inside the goal line. They ran another short pass play and quick snap from the two to get off. I believe it was James White or Deion Lewis who ran in for the touchdown, and it ended up making the score 14-10 at the half. And before I go further into the second half, that matchup killed Jacksonville defensively, because once the Patriots found it, they continued to throw deep. And I know our Patriots super fan has often said there's no reason to throw deep to Brandon Cooks. Well, when you have a corner like Bouye, who constantly was out of position all day on when he was matched up with Cooks, the Patriots said, well, if you're not going to change this, we're not going to stop throwing deep. And they continue to take shot after shot after shot downfield, whether it worked or not, because they knew there was a good chance that they were going to get the penalty on Bouye. And more times than not, they did. Cooks didn't catch any of those deep passes. A lot of times it was the deep comeback route where he was running the corner all 5 yards and coming back to the sticks to catch first down plays. That ended up being the theme as well. And I think at halftime, Jacksonville realized Bouye is getting torched by Cooks, so we're going to switch. And what we saw in the second half was Jalen Ramsey following Cooks one-on-one for the entirety of the second half. Wherever Cooks went, Ramsey went, which left Bouye on the other wide receiver, which more times than not was Logan. Unfortunately, that played right into the Patriots' hands, because then it became Danny Amendola time, especially in the fourth quarter. And I'll throw it back to you. as far as what else you saw in the first half and adjustments you saw going into the second.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well done on your end, sir. First, in the first half, I thought that the Jaguars were just absolutely abusing what the Patriots were giving them off of play action. It seemed to be every time that they didn't run, they were running some sort of play fake where if it wasn't a safety, you know, you saw, I believe it was Chung got beat on the Mercedes Lewis touchdown. If it wasn't him, it was Van Noy or one of the linebackers or, you know, somebody like that. Even when they were going around on the end, you mentioned the way they were, you know, they were outflanking the Patriots. They, you know, even saw that on the end a couple times where people just lost contain because of the play fake. And they absolutely used that to their advantage. Huge second half adjustments, though, by the Patriots as far as the, you know, the blitz packages and things like that were concerned. You know, they did shut that down pretty much in the second half, where the Jags were also able to use a lot of, you know, like the flats and you mentioned like some quick screens. You know, Grant was in the game early. You know, he was very effective. They threw a couple, you know, screens early on just due to people being covered. But the Patriots were continually leaving the flats and the middle open. You mentioned they were running some, you know, some crossing routes. Those were working early as well. You know, the Patriots just, you know, again, one of the reasons I hate to keep bringing up Lions things, but one of the reasons that we're so excited to see somebody like Matt Patricia come over is you saw the adjustments being made. You know, and I'm with you, James. I feel like Jacksonville showed up for this game and the previous two. So I can't say that it's a lack of experience. One thing that I did disagree with, though, when both Ryan and Patrick were talking about, you know, and hey, and even our fearless leader, you know, Pod Vader was talking about, you know, the Patriots, they don't know why they continue to try to take shots at Brandon Cooks. You know, you have to keep defenses honest.
Right.
I absolutely, you know, when you look at some of these, you know, yeah, you know, Brady did throw underthrow one, you know, but when I see most of these plays during the regular season, I only saw a couple times when Brady underthrew Cooks, and it was typically earlier in the season. In these playoff games and also in the later half of the season, I saw Brady overthrowing Cooks a lot. We saw one go off his fingertips today that if it was just maybe, I don't know, 2 inches less, if he takes just a fingernail off of that ball, that's a touchdown. Right. And the game's not even as close as it was. You know, next thing you know, Cooks has 6 grabs for 100 yards. And you mentioned the adjustment of AJ Boye, who didn't allow, I believe, a single touchdown all season until last week,
right,
against Antonio Brown. You know, how dare he? You know, well, he's only the best receiver in the game by far, in my opinion.
Exactly.
But yeah, you mentioned the shadow coverage of Ramsey. At that point, they said, well, we're going to have to stick Ramsey on Cooks because, I mean, that they felt like in their hearts that that's what, you know, they needed to do to win. While I agree with making a move like that, you hit it right on the head. You know, and terrible choice of words, because I was just going to say once Gronk was knocked out, which is exactly how it happened, you know, they were taking the shots to Cooks. Josh McDaniels, it's no surprise that he's also going to be a head coach next year, which is kind of a recurring theme here on this episode. But, you know, this guy schemes like no other. They will take the matchups that you give them every single time, and they will absolutely crush, you know, whoever is the mismatched, you know, opponent on defense. You know, if they have Deion Lewis or James White out on the flank with a linebacker, that's a no contest. They are going to target that. Yeah. And I love that we got Tony Romo on this broadcast, because, you know, he pointed that out a few times during the show, you know, that they had a certain mismatch. And like you mentioned, once they had that deep threat in Cooks established which was really the entire point of the play calling. Get the deep threat established, get the defense uncomfortable. And when you have aggressive corners like that, that's how you beat them, or that's how you get them off their game. And that's absolutely what happened. Was, you know, the defense couldn't quite be as aggressive, and all of a sudden, all these over the middle things, and, you know, crossing routes, the little rubs, and all these little plays where Amendola's sneaking out, boom, two touchdowns later in the fourth quarter, you know, Tom Brady does it again. So it's absolutely a amazing game. Really wished it would have turned out the other way. But hey, it is what it is. You know, I guess I got to wait another week for this Matt Patricia confirmation.
Well, it seems like we have a guest caller in here. I thought I heard someone chime in. Who do we have here?
Oh, it looks like Ryan, our Jaguars super fan, has decided to join us. Welcome, sir.
Hello, fellas. How are you doing?
Hey, we're doing okay, my friend. Sorry about the result of the game. But James and I just pretty much went through the long and short of it. Any final thoughts or recap thoughts that you'd like to see touch upon here going forward? We kind of mentioned a couple of items here with the Vikings and the Eagles with some, you know, personnel and things like that. But we've really only spoke about just the game thus far for the AFC Championship. What say you, Ryan?
Well. Yeah, final stamp sounds pretty good. You know, I wanted to come on, gotta face the defeat. I mean, pretty incredible to think 3-13 and you go to up 10 in the AFC Championship. Pretty big turnaround, you know, 3-13 being the record last year. So, you know, it was a very enjoyable season. I enjoyed the ride, and one thing that would have been nice about winning is, you know, all the condescension out there, especially toward Blake Bortles. It just would have been nice. I've seen him fight through it all. I can't say that I was always his biggest backer, including when he was drafted. I'll just put that out there. But once he became our quarterback, you know, I've been behind him. He's been, he's been real tough, and he was out playing Brady for a lot of the game. But then there's the fourth quarter, and then there's Tom Brady. And even if you got the best pass defense in the NFL, he's going to do what he does. As far as the game goes, the not going for another score with 55 seconds left in the first half, I thought was questionable by Marone. And then the 3rd-and-18 play that Brady picked up was huge. There's two, I don't know if you mentioned it, and I'm not going to get into the refs, really. It's not what I like to do. But there were two plays, I don't even know if they were really focused on during the game or if people saw it, but where Mercedes Lewis seemed to get mauled going for passes, and there was just no calls. It was odd. And then the delay of game penalty we got well after the play was over, you know, I didn't hear a whistle, didn't hear anything. And I haven't seen any images, but the Miles Jack fumble recovery, some people are saying he wasn't touched down, which the Jaguars have gotten burned on. A few times, and probably would have had a few more defensive scores this year. Ultimately, I think I was the most shocked that on 3rd-and-9 or whatever it was to end the game, that they ran for it and they got it against this defense.
Yeah,
like in that moment, that was crushing. And then, you know, there it is. That's everything I got, basically. You know.
No, we definitely hit up on the weird delay game call, and I completely agree, at least on one of those Mercedes Lewis absolutely was just getting climbed upon, and there was no flag there, but you know, I know all too well how that is, Ryan, unfortunately.
Yeah.
especially yeah, in the playoffs, dude. So one thing I do want to say though, phenomenal season by the Jaguars. There were a lot of people coming into this season saying, you know, you guys are looking good with the exception of the quarterback. We mentioned that Bortles played a fairly awesome game, and kudos to him. You know, this team very, very promising future. Blake Bortles is, it feels like he's been around forever because everybody likes to just like stomp on him. But this dude is young. You have a rookie stud running back, just a phenomenal defense. I know I said phenomenal already to describe the season, but I mean, this defense is legit. All these teams we saw play today had just awesome defenses. You saw the second half adjustments by the Patriots, both the Vikings and the Eagles, with just outstanding squads on the defensive side. And of course, Ryan, your Jaguars, you guys have both your coordinators coming back next year, I believe, as well. Things are looking pretty good in Jacksonville, my friend.
It looks that way. I appreciate all those words. If I'm going to look at the sunny side, which will probably be easier as time goes on, you know, today's pretty rough. But one thing I was thinking before the game is that Super Bowl champions, and I don't even know this to be true about the Rams. I was just going back in my head, like each year, the Super Bowl champion like had been there before, at least in the playoffs, for a long time now. And there hasn't really been one who is just all of a sudden, here we are, and now we win. Like the Seahawks got to the playoffs the year before they won, almost beat the Falcons, they lost. You know, even the Broncos, they get to the Super Bowl, they lose big, they come back a few years later, and they win. You know, the Patriots, obviously, there every year, and kind of on and on, the Steelers and whoever you mentioned. So, especially looking at the Seahawks or maybe even these newer age Broncos teams we just had, seems like almost like how the NBA had been for a little while, where you gotta make it to the playoffs, get some pain, and then you come back stronger, it seems, the next year where you got a shot. So that's what I'm rolling with now, and maybe it'll be Jacksonville next year.
Well, hey, one thing I can say is you know, you're gonna have the nucleus to that team here for quite a while, so a lot to look forward to. Again, an incredible AFC championship game. Sorry the way that turned out, Ryan. Just consider my kind remarks the proverbial pat on your back to ease you through this evening. And that should do it, my friends. I appreciate James. I really appreciate you coming on to recap your Eagles trouncing of the Vikings. And Ryan, appreciate you coming on to give some closing thoughts here on the Jaguars' loss to the Patriots. Again, hey, this is going to be...
Congrats there, James. Just realized, you know, we had a winner on this call here, so congrats to you, sir.
Thank you very much. I wish things could have turned out better for your Jaguars. Look, I will be first to mention, I was one of the ones who pretty much went into the season looking at Blake Bortles like, this is not going to go well, especially when you saw what he did in the preseason and the first couple of weeks of the season. It's like the team was winning in spite of, and then he had that stretch towards the end of the season where he had like three games, no turnovers, 300 yards, 75% or better completion percentage, which is right around when like D.D. Westbrook came back and he was like out of this world playing. Kind of came back down to earth the last couple of weeks. But against both the Steelers and the Patriots, he played exceptionally well. Even though, like I said, the outcome wasn't what you all wanted today, Blake Bortles has earned my respect in these last two playoff games. I would definitely say that much. Before we go, though, I just want to, you know, real quick from you, just what do you think happens in the offseason with Bortles? Because, you know, Coughlin, VP personnel, was obviously people believe that he was in the locker room or the defensive staff meetings giving some pointers on how to stymie or stifle Brady in that offense. And, you know, there's a quarterback in New York who was, you know, let's just say he was done dirty towards the end of the year as far as being benched before his head coach got fired, who has a nice little tie to Tom Coughlin. So, what do you see going forward for Blake Bortles, first and foremost, and do you think there'll be a change opening day next year?
I knew this would be coming at some point. Appreciate the words. We'll get into the offseason and in depth when the time comes. My quick answer is, I don't know. My gut feeling is he's back and Bortles is the starter. And I'm sure this is crazy because the connection is so clear because of Coughlin and everything. But I don't know. I legitimately don't think that that's the way they're thinking, is to bring in Eli Manning. And especially at this point in his career, obviously he's got the pedigree and everything. And then, you know, maybe you sign Cousins or something like that. I don't know. I feel okay, which I'm sure it's just coming off the playoff run, but I feel okay with Blake. But I think Marone and Coughlin will do whatever they think is best, whatever quarterback they think is best to lead that team. I think he will be the guy. And it certainly could be somebody else, but my gut feeling is Bortles is going to be the starter opening day.
Okay.
All right. Excellent. You know what, Ryan? Didn't even forgot to give you kudos, man. Your X factor was Miles Jack, and dude showed up until he got hurt, and then you saw Darius got hurt. Pretty much, was it like the successive plays there?
Man,
that was
a huge play by Jack. Appreciate that. I saw you. Yeah. Saw you tell me that on our message client thing, and yeah. That felt really big at the time, but we didn't get any points off the turnover, which was too bad. Otherwise, yeah, Jack would have been a hero.
I hear you. Yeah, well, hey,
sucks they ruled that dead.
Yeah, oh, yeah. A lot of sucky things, but there's a Super Bowl coming for a few people that aren't.
Absolutely, me. Absolutely. And as James mentioned, a rematch of the was it 2004 when Super Bowl 39 rolled around with these two teams last time?
Yeah, 2005 actually.
Yeah, there you go.
The game took place in 2005.
See, you know, that's why I always am like a year off on my Super Bowls, man. But hey, this is a rematch again of Super Bowl 39 that we're looking forward to with the Patriots versus the Philadelphia Eagles. And gentlemen, again, thanks for stopping by. I could hang out and talk football with you guys pretty much all night, but we got to stop sometime. And there's a big game coming up here in 2 weeks. We'll see what happens. Good luck. Best of luck to your Eagles, James, and Ryan. Thanks again for stopping out.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy.
All right, everybody. That'll do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you so much to Josh, to James, to Ryan. Thank you to the listener. Next stop, Super Bowl. That is the final game on the calendar for the season. I can't believe it's ending already. But hey, we're not through. Once the season ends, we'll have all sorts of off-season shows coming your way. We're working out the details on those now. In the meantime, keep sending us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @NFUPodcast. Keep checking out our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com, of course. If you want to reach us, you can go all those avenues. Definitely keep going to harrys.com/nextfanup. Take advantage of that awesome deal that they've got set up. With that, going to turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.